Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
More than 90% of people believe there is an afterlife.
I faded out, like, from reality and...
The next thing after that, I remember, was seeing myself on the emergency table, and they were working on me, trying to revive me.
Being brought up this tunnel of light.
I was feeling all this love and this acceptance.
An hour later, the doctor came out, and she said she was fine. And out of nowhere, she just asked when she can see God again.
Most people are raised to believe that we are born, we age, and then we die. It's the natural cycle of life to death. Easy to see and understand. But what do you believe happens after we die? This is where opinion splits. Some have spiritual practices or experiences that describe our afterlife. Some believe in what they can see, touch, and measure. But can your beliefs on the afterlife change? I wasn't sure until I heard of Dr. Eben Alexander, a neurosurgeon who went through a near-death experience in 2008.
He was a man of science. He didn't believe in it.
When I was younger, I thought a heaven and a loving God made sense. But through my academic neurosurgery career, I saw less and less that that could be the case.
I started out in a primitive earthworm eye view, very coarse, unresponsive realm, which I think in retrospect was the best consciousness my brain could muster when it was soaking in pus and the neocortex, the human part of the brain, was being destroyed. But then I was rescued from that by a slowly spinning white light into a beautiful, ultra-real, idyllic valley filled with life and growing plants with butterflies, sparkling pools of water, angelic choirs up above, emanating tremendous, awesome, and joy and beauty in these incredible anthems, chants, and hymns that came down from above, and then ascended up beyond that into realms beyond all time and space.
During his experience, he was taken to a heaven-like place where everything he thought he knew about neuroscience was proven wrong. Shortly after, he wrote the best-selling book titled Proof of Heaven. What I find fascinating about this particular near-death experience is Dr. Eben's scientific background. His understanding of the brain and the way he's able to expertly describe what happened to him. Hear it in his words.
I woke up about 4:30 in the morning with severe back pain, headache. And then the next thing my family knew is I was lapsed into general epileptic seizures. I was in grand mal status, which meant I was just seizing and completely unconscious. And that's when they called the EMTs, took me off to the Lynchburg General Hospital emergency room, and did a lumbar puncture. Out came thick white pus under pressure. My neurologic exam showed devastation. The reality is I just went deep into coma, and it was a severe case of E. coli bacterial meningitis, which is a real shocker because almost all cases of E. coli meningitis occur in newborns. It's very rare to encounter it beyond the age of 3 months. You know, how did this happen? And then I deteriorated through that week on 3 powerful antibiotics. They'd had me on a ventilator from the get-go. One of the unusual features of my near-death experience is that I was amnesic. I had no memory of Eben Alexander's life. I had no language, no words, no knowledge of Earth, this universe. It was a completely empty slate, and that's quite unusual for an NDE, but I think it was important in teaching me some of the deeper lessons. My brain was shut down. There's something called the Glasgow Coma Scale that you use to measure coma. Anybody in this room would score a 15. That means they're doing great. If you're a corpse, you get a 3. Anything below 9 is deep coma. And for the vast majority of that week in coma, I was around a 6 or 7, sometimes as low as a 5. So I was in deep coma the whole time. They had CT and MRI scan data showing that all 8 lobes of my brain were affected. No part was spared. And that's why to have an extraordinarily rich experience, far more real than anything I'd ever experienced in my life, completely violates everything I thought I knew about brain, mind, and
conscious. Because you need a conscious brain to experience.
But no, you don't. The brain is a filter. Its main function is actually to restrict consciousness down to this tiny little illusion of kind of self and non-self, you know, all the stuff out there, and a here and now. But so much of that is really a fiction.
You step over from this world into the next. What happened?
Well, for me, that journey began in a very primitive, coarse, unresponsive realm. It was like being in dirty jello. I called it the earthworm's eye view. And I was there for a very long period of time. I'm sure I didn't have any kind of memory formation moment to moment. So it seemed to last forever. But the good news is it didn't. I was rescued by this slowly spinning, pure white light with fine silvery and golden tendrils. And as it came towards me, I realized it came with a perfect musical melody. Not music heard with the ears, because in those realms, our awareness goes far beyond the limitations of physical eyes and ears and a physical brain. But the good news is that beautiful spinning white light opened up into a brilliant, ultra-real realm that I call the Gateway Valley. And that was filled with many Earth-like features. It was a world of perfection and ideals. There was no death or decay anywhere. Beautiful, lush plant life, flowers, buds on trees, blossoms, colors beyond the rainbow. I was a speck of awareness on a butterfly wing among millions of butterflies, looping and spiraling in vast formations above this Gateway Valley. And in that valley were thousands of beings dancing, lots of joy and merriment. And when I wrote it all up weeks later, I said these were souls. I knew they were souls between lives, and that there was this incredible joy and merriment going on. It was all being fueled because up above were these swooping orbs, pure spiritual orbs of divine energy, which I came to call angelic choirs when I had to put a label on them. But it was the anthems and chants and hymns that would thunder down from this beautiful chorus of angels above. It was fueling this incredible festivity, sparkling waterfalls into crystal blue pools, and all of this joy and merriment, children playing and dogs jumping,
so
incredible happiness.
Your senses are heightened and not contained and not
Correct.
Confined.
Got to remember, our brain and our eyes and ears, they give us a very kind of diluted down version of reality compared to that. There, it's like drinking through a fire hose, an incredible ocean of this loving awareness. And for me, in that beautiful Gateway Valley realm, on the wing of that butterfly, my first awareness of the divine was a sense of a divine wind, or the breath of God, as I called it in some of my early writings, that blew through. And it was amazing because even though the elements of the scene stayed the same, all of a sudden I realized the incredible power of that divine force, of that causal force of an infinitely loving God. Not a judging God, one of infinite love, of being home, of our spiritual essence, of the purity of our being. With comfort that really goes beyond any words.
So you felt comforted.
And that's why
you felt at peace.
Absolutely. And that is such a beautiful lesson that comes not just from my near-death experience, but from near-death experiences across all cultures, all nations, going back several thousand years. The stories are always of this beautiful peace, like we are home. This incredible joy and oneness, and that God force of pure infinite love is so healing. The good news is you don't need a near-death experience to know this. It turns out that it didn't all happen in that Gateway Valley, that in fact the music from those angelic choirs provided portals to higher and higher levels, all the way out to the core. And the core was infinite inky blackness, but filled to overflowing with that God force of love. And all in the setting of the entire material universe and lower spiritual realms having been shrunk down to this complex oversphere that was there as a source of lessons and teaching. But in that realm was this incredible oneness with the divine, a sense that our very conscious awareness is directly connected. There's no separation between us and that God force. Of course, the God force is the pure love,
yes,
with absolute unconditional love for all of creation. I wasn't alone. There was a beautiful young woman beside me on the butterfly wing. And she never spoke a word. She didn't have to. She was dressed in the very same simple garb and yet beautiful colors of all those thousands of beings dancing down below. And she looked at me with her sparkling blue eyes and high cheekbones, a broad smile, soft brown hair framing her beautiful face with a look of infinite love. And that, to me, was the essence of the journey. And I think the most important thing for me to bring back was how her awareness came into my mind. And of course, it wasn't his words when it happened, but when I put it all to words weeks later in writing it all up, the message was very simple. And the thing is, I knew her so well from her mental, emotional connection with me in my mind. And yet I realized, and this was especially haunting in the months after my coma, when I started reading thousands of near-death experiences and saw that there was always a guardian angel who was somebody very crucial in your life. And I remembered her so perfectly that I knew I'd never met her in my life. You know, that was the beautiful discovery 4 months after my coma. And of course, there's that beautiful picture. That's exactly.
So you didn't know who this was?
No.
I had no idea.
And it has to do with the fact that I had met my birth family about a year before my coma. But the reality is they were still suffering from the loss of that that daughter, and so they didn't really want to talk about her too much. And you know, what they did share was what a beautiful, angelic, loving soul that she was. And of course, I was quite sad as a brother who never got to meet her in this world. And that's why when my birth sister, Kathy, she finally sent me a picture, and I received that picture about 4 months after my coma. And it turns out it was very important that at the same time, because I think I needed some opening in my awareness and in my mindset, at the same time I was reading a beautiful story in Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's book, Life After Death. And in that she tells a story of a 13-year-old girl who had was in coma, very sick medically. And in this beautiful journey, she was welcomed to the heavenly realm by her brother. And he was demonstrated to her that power of unconditional love and the beauty of that of God in that realm, and then helped her make a decision to come back to this world. And when she did, she was talking to her father about it. She said, "But I don't understand. I don't have a brother." And he said, "Well, you did, but he died 3 months before you were born, so we never told you about him." And that's when I looked up at the picture that I just received the afternoon before. And I collapsed on the ground, and my heart pounds, and I can't, even now, every time I revisit this story, chills running up and down my spine because of the beauty of that recognition of that guardian angel. And all of a sudden, I realized we were deeply connected. And in fact, it's like she was looking at me in the picture that you showed a few minutes ago, as if to say, "Do you finally get it?"
Yeah.
"Well, yes, Betsy, I finally get it." Well, the doctors had estimated early in the week that I had about a 10% chance of living through it. After 7 days in coma, just a horrible medical picture in terms of prognosis, they predicted that had gone down to a 2% chance of survival. But in that medical conference they held that Sunday morning, they recommended to the family stopping the antibiotics. And the reason for that is they thought there was no chance for my recovery. So when I did actually open my eyes on that Sunday morning, they were shocked. My brain was so completely savaged by this experience, I had no idea who these beings were standing at my bedside. My sisters, my sons, my former spouse, my mother, I didn't know who they were. All I remembered was where I'd been, this incredibly rich journey. And I also had, for about 36 hours after I came back to life and they pulled out the breathing tube, I was kind of in and out of a crazy, paranoid, delusional ICU psychosis, a nightmare, back and forth in that world. But the memories from deep coma in many ways were far more real, vibrant, and alive than any of the rest of it. And that paranoid, delusional nightmare, those memories faded within about a week. The memories from the deep coma experience are as fresh today as if they happened yesterday.
My goodness.
You know, when millions and millions of people start sharing these stories,
yes,
there is no doubt, yes, of the eternity of soul and the reality of this God.
The research said that you go down a tunnel, you meet a being of light, you go into this transcendent reality where you meet dead relatives and spiritual beings. You may have a life review, then you'll come to a border, which if you cross, you know you're going to die. So it's a perfectly valid question to ask. Is this near-death experience a model of what will happen when you die?
I faded out, like, from reality, and
the next thing after that, I remember, was seeing myself on the emergency table, and they were working on me, trying to revive me.
Being brought up this tunnel of light.
I was feeling all this love and this acceptance.
And out of nowhere, she just asked when she can see God again.
I woke up about 4:30 in the morning with severe back pain, headache. The next thing my family knew is I was lapsed into general epileptic seizures. The reality is I just went deep into coma, and it was a severe case of E. coli bacterial meningitis, which is a real shocker because almost all cases of E. coli meningitis occur in newborns.
By the time she found me, I was already getting stiff because I died in the morning and people really didn't come into my room until about 10 a.m.
Oh my gosh.
So at about that time, they started measuring my vital signs, and there were no vital signs for an hour and a half, at which time they gave up.
My eyes were closed, and I was completely in this coma, but I was aware of everything that was going on around me. I could hear and see and feel everything that was happening. I could feel everything the doctors were doing. They were poking needles into me and putting in IV tubes and things like that. And I could see and hear things that were beyond the room that my physical body was in. And I realized that I could even see my physical body. It was like I felt that I had become separate from my body.
Had CT and MRI scan data showing that all eight lobes of my brain were affected. No part was spared. And that's why to have an extraordinarily rich experience, far more real than anything I'd ever experienced in my life, completely violates everything I thought I knew about brain, mind,
and consciousness. Because you need a conscious brain to experience.
But no, you don't. It was like being in dirty jello. I called it the earthworm's eye view. And I was there for a very long period of time. I'm sure I didn't have any kind of memory formation moment to moment, so it seemed to last forever. But the good news is it didn't. I was rescued by this slowly spinning, pure white light with fine silvery and golden tendrils. And as it came towards me, I realized it came with a perfect musical melody.
As I went to the light, and some people, you know, report on tunnels and things like that. Mine was, I guess you could call it a tunnel in a way, but it was this rainbow shimmering light, and the light was, but part of it was going to the light, and the other part of it was coming from the light. And as I was moving up, I sort of realized that one, that the column of light going up was all the people that were dying at that time, and the other side of the same light, actually it was the same light beam, on the other side was all the souls coming in, being born. And I realized I was on the wrong train.
I encountered my deceased father. My father had died 10 years prior, and I felt that he was there to greet me, and he wanted me to know that it wasn't my time. But even though it wasn't my time to die, I still felt I had the choice. I could still choose to die if I wanted to.
Not music heard with the ears, because in those realms, our awareness goes far beyond the limitations of physical eyes and ears and a physical brain.
In that realm, it felt like because we don't have our bodies, we don't have vocal cords, it was like my father's essence and mine, we just merged, so I knew exactly what he wanted me to know. And he wanted me to know that I had suffered up until this point. And even though I didn't have to go back to my body, if I chose not to go back, I would be missing out on the gifts that were now waiting for me. So I understood that now if I go back, I won't be living a life of suffering anymore because of what I now knew.
But the good news is that beautiful spinning white light opened up into a brilliant ultra-real realm that I call the Gateway Valley. And that was filled with many Earth-like features. It was a world of perfection and ideals. There was no death or decay anywhere. Beautiful, lush plant life, flowers, buds on trees, blossoms, colors beyond the rainbow. I was a speck of awareness on a butterfly wing among millions of butterflies, looping and spiraling in vast formations above this Gateway Valley. And in that valley were thousands of beings dancing, lots of joy and merriment. And when I wrote it all up weeks later, I said these were souls. I knew they were souls between lives, and that there was this incredible joy and merriment going on. It was all being fueled because up above were these swooping orbs, pure spiritual orbs of divine energy, which I came to call angelic choirs when I had to put a label on them. But it was the anthems and chants and hymns that would thunder down from this beautiful chorus of angels above that was fueling this incredible festivity. Sparkling waterfalls into crystal blue pools, and all of this joy and merriment.
Right after my experience, I'd say within a couple of months after my experience, the light would just come and get me and take me out of my body. So I would go to the light again, and the light and I would have more conversations, and I was always given an idea or an invention to bring back. Every exchange I've ever had with the light took about a year or so to where I got comfortable with these experiences and just would let it happen. And Phyllis Atwater and Ken Ring were the first to tell me that, Melon, nobody else does this. I said, well, I go back to the light every day. At one point, I was told I would, from now on, have contact to universal intelligence and that I could answer any question. And I've been tested in double-blind university experiments on this, on being able to give answers about something I should know nothing about whatsoever. But I go to the light and I get answers. But I was warned before I came back. The light said, when you go back, don't be surprised. Even if you or anyone else could answer any question, don't be surprised if that's not the point. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, at this time in history, humans are much more interested in the questions than the answers. And that turned out to be my experience over many years. I would work on these great experiments and these think tanks. We would come up with all these great ideas, and I would draw schematics. I would get frequencies down to the decimals, and quite often the devices were never built, or if they were, they were never really pursued. And I predicted eight astronomical discoveries 20 years before they were discovered, and thank God I did lectures about them and documented it so that I can prove what I'm saying. But I was not a scientist or an astronomer or a physicist, but I had seen things that I could report on, and they've turned out to be very accurate.
So you felt comforted.
And that's why
you felt at peace.
Absolutely. And that is such a beautiful lesson that comes not just from my near-death experience, but from near-death experiences across all cultures, all nations, going back several thousand years. The stories are always of this beautiful peace, like we are home. This incredible joy and oneness, and that God force of pure infinite love is so healing. The good news is you don't need a near-death experience to know this.
I also felt something which I can only describe as a feeling of unconditional love. It was like a euphoric kind of feeling. I suddenly realized that I don't have to do anything to prove myself. I don't have to do anything to feel that I deserve to be loved. I was loved just because I existed.
It turns out that it didn't all happen in that Gateway Valley. That in fact, the music from those angelic choirs provided portals to higher and higher levels, all the way out to the core. And the core was infinite, inky blackness, but filled to overflowing with that God force of love. And all in the setting of the entire material universe and lower spiritual realms having been shrunk down to this complex oversphere that was there as a source of lessons and teaching. But in that realm was this incredible oneness with the divine, a sense that our very conscious awareness is directly connected. There's no separation between us and that God force. Of course, the God force is the pure love,
yes,
with absolute unconditional love for all of creation.
And in that awakening, my father said to me, now that you know this truth, you need to go back and live fearlessly. And I understood if I went back, my body would heal. The doctor, though, he told my family, he said that, look, she may have woken up from the coma, but she is still very, very weak. She's still very, very sick, and her body is full of cancer and tumors. And so don't raise your hopes, because even if she survives, there's a long journey ahead. Within 4 days, the tumor shrunk by 70%. Within 3 weeks, they couldn't find any trace of cancer in my body.
Well, the doctors had estimated early in the week that I had about a 10% chance of living through it. After 7 days in coma, with just a horrible medical picture in terms of prognosis, they predicted that had gone down to a 2% chance of survival. But in that medical conference they held that Sunday morning, they recommended to the family stopping the antibiotics. And the reason for that is they thought there was no chance for my recovery. So when I did actually open my eyes on that Sunday morning, they were shocked. My brain was so completely savaged by this experience, I had no idea who these beings were standing at my bedside. My sisters, my sons, my former spouse, my mother. I didn't know who they were. Mm. All I remembered was where I'd been, this incredibly rich journey. And I also had, for about 36 hours after I came back to life and they pulled out the breathing tube, I was kind of in and out of a crazy, paranoid, delusional ICU psychosis, a nightmare, back and forth in that world. But the memories from deep coma in many ways were far more real, vibrant, and alive than any of the rest of it. And that paranoid delusional nightmare, those memories faded within about a week. The memories from the deep coma experience are as fresh today as if they happened yesterday.
My goodness.
You know, when millions and millions of people start sharing these stories,
yes,
there is no doubt,
yes,
of the eternity of soul and the reality of this God.
After that experience, after actually dying and coming back, I don't follow dogma or any kind of religion or spirituality, because it's like now I know that I'm a spiritual being. We all are. Every single one of us, we are. We don't have to work at it. I don't have to keep working at it or trying to be more spiritual. I already am. There's nothing to work at. We all are. I realized from death that actually my purpose here is to immerse myself in life fully, not to spend it thinking about creating the perfect afterlife. I'm here for a reason, and I'm here to be who I am. I'm a facet of this universe. I'm an aspect, and I am the way I am for a reason. My purpose is to be as me as I can be.
What I learned and what I believe to this day is that the physical body that we live in actually gives us the most beautiful vehicle ever imagined to experience time and space. There may be people here that think they're in pain, that think their life is not anything like they want, but I tell you, I have met people that would give you anything for the worst day of your life. Because even the worst day of your life is so filled with potential.
5, 4, command engine start. 2, 1.
And at 90 years old, Captain Kirk from the original Star Trek series will become the oldest person to have ever traveled to space.
Stand by touchdown. Stand by touchdown.
There is Mother Earth, comfort, and is there death? I don't know, but is that death? Is that the way death is? Whoop, and it's gone.
Living long is only part of the way, you know. Yeah. Then what do you do with that long life? Well, you say yes to opportunity and to joy and to the quality of life. Saying yes to life. You have your own set of experiences, totally different from mine.
Right.
So I can't advise you. I can only say, this is what I did when faced with these circumstances. If it resonates with you,
absolutely,
may work, but I can't lecture you. See, I think we're out here for a limited period of time of our life to see the glory of whatever it is you think the glory is, nature, God, thing. We're here to visualize, to see it. And then we disappear. Of course, we don't know where we disappear to.
Yeah.
That's all up to your opinion and my opinion.
That's right.
But look at this opportunity. No matter what your circumstances are, you're breathing in the air and you're seeing the sky, and it's all awesome.
Yeah. Man.
Let's meet me on the bridge.
You know, we have more in tune with an earthworm than anything else. Our DNA is like 55% of an earthworm. And trees and us have the same. We're all linked. We're all one. I try to focus on the beauty of life, which is eggs and the mountains, the horses, love, dogs, tea, taste of orange, which I just had. The sensory and philosophical beauty of life. The connection that I know that all life has is something so profoundly moving that I think of it a lot. The connection that we all have, slime, which has a manner of seeking life. Slime seeks life. Slime seeks life. Can you imagine? It kind of finds its way. And then you have orcas that think how to kill a shark. I mean, it's so beautiful. I try to focus on that. I think we die and our bodies are consumed and we enter the universe. In fact, there is this thing where you are buried in a pod and then a tree is placed over that pod and the tree gets nourishment from your body and you in essence become the tree, because that's how I want to go. All our names will fade into dust, and then in the shortest while you'll be a non-entity, a mote of dust in the air, and so will I, and everything will be forgotten. But what won't be forgotten is the good deeds you're doing here, or the good deeds we do in life reverberate like the butterfly effect, and that's what, although we personally won't be remembered, the effect you have by helping somebody or something, that's what won't be forgotten.
Loneliness, being alone, the fear of being alone, is a huge part of what I am. At this great school that I was attending, the teacher on Valentine's Day said, everybody, send the people you like a Valentine. Everybody's gonna get a Valentine. Some intuition, even as whatever I was, 6, 7, 8 years old, I sent myself Valentines, and those were the only Valentines I got. So that, why, I don't know. I'm of the illusion that everybody is lonely at one time or another, and some people more than others. The way out is family and friends and participation in a variety of things, a show, a movie, a work, a charity, helping other people, training animals and being part of a larger, I mean, the whole human race is divided into units to deceive loneliness, from the family unit to the tribe to the nation to the collection of joining in order to avoid loneliness. Otherwise, you won't be alone. Every major episode of your life is tearing away from what you thought was permanent, and there's no permanence. Change is the nature of the universe, and everything is changing, and can we accept that change? And you look at that change and think, my God, I'm moving my house. I'm moving to another area. I'm going someplace else. Somebody just died. That, what do I do? It's if you look at your life, it's constantly changing and evolving to something, and those connections that you had, you no longer have. And for me, it's like, wow.
How do I understand changes in life? Because life is constantly changing. Change is the unit of existence everywhere. Change is constant. So changes in your life, like you and I are no longer the same, having just asked that question and now I'm getting an answer, we're no longer the same, we're different. So those minute changes collect into massive changes in our life, and we got to go with them. So our life changes all the time. And if we realize that and go with those changes and not fight our fate, that's the good life, I think. The bad life, the life of turmoil, is trying not to change.
I think deep down we understand that we're born alone and we die alone. And that dying alone, as you get older, becomes more and more a subject of thought. What happens? And that's where I'm at.
Is there something at the end of life? Is there more? Can you reach a communion with someone or something that voids the loneliness that we all feel? I don't know. I pose it as a question.
If someone out there is watching this and feels lonely, what's your advice to them?
Go into a bar and slap somebody on the shoulder.
Just not you.
Do something for somebody. That's my advice. That's what I would do. Do something for somebody else.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.